Welcome to AMDA on the Hill, your opportunity to keep up with the latest policy and advocacy news from the Society for Post-Acute and Long-Term Care Medicine. AMDA on the Hill is produced in association with AMDA on the Go and available on the same podcast channel. Support for this podcast is brought to you by U.S. Post-Acute Care. And now here is your host for AMDA on the Hill, Alex Bardock.
Hello and welcome to AMDA on the Hill, your periodic update for AMDA's public policy work. My name is Alex Bardock and I'm the Director of Policy and Advocacy here at AMDA. Just wanted to give you a quick update from what has occurred over the past week with the COVID response. First, I want to mention that we, AMDA, is sending out daily updates with various updates on the most on the important issues that are going on. If you are not receiving those updates, please let us know. That is the way we are trying to communicate with you around our advocacy efforts, around our guidance materials on clinical issues and other things. Second, wanted to give you the breaking news that occurred on Monday, March 30th. Essentially, CMS issued sweeping changes in an interim final rule that addressed a number of issues that AMDA had been advocating on. First, telehealth. We have been talking to CMS for quite some time, and I've talked about it on these updates, about removing barriers to telehealth practice in nursing facilities. Well, on Monday, March 30th, CMS did address those things in the interim final rule. It addressed a number of issues that AMDA had been talking about. First, it removed the once-a-month 30-day limitation on skilled nursing facilities' subsequent care visits. Also, it added initial visits and discharge visits to the list of acceptable telehealth services in a skilled nursing facility. Essentially, what they've done is provided sweeping changes and said, no required visits. Those 30, 60, 90 days visits need to be done face-to-face. Everything can be done via telehealth, and they use the words as appropriate. So this, of course, helps with the problem of having to go into facilities and multiple facilities and potentially spreading the virus. So what they also have said is that in order to bill these services, they urge you to use modifier 95 and bill the CPT codes as they are and use that modifier 95. Of course, you have to document everything you're doing and make sure that you're putting that you're doing this during COVID and what you're doing with the patient. The other thing that was very positive is that it was backdated to March 1st. And so what that does is if you were doing these services and billing or trying to bill for these services, they can now be paid for. Although the guidance was issued on March 30th, they backdated it to March 1st. So all of that was great news. We applaud CMS for taking this action. We applaud CMS for being decisive and doing that. I should also mention that they addressed in this guidance and added assisted living CPT codes as well as home health CPT codes to the telehealth list. We had gotten a lot of questions about this. So if you're seeing patients in assisted living or home health, you can now use telehealth as well, which I think is certainly welcome news. In the guidance, there were also some other parts to it. They addressed workforce training. They eliminated some requirements for CNAs, of course, looking at potential surge and having to have more nurses and more healthcare workers to take care of the population. I would urge you to read it. We have put out a press release on this. We have put out links to this. It is on our COVID and our telehealth page. There's a lot to read through, but they have frequently asked questions. They have fact sheets, so please read through them. And of course, if you have any questions, we're here to help. Please ask us, and please let us know if there's anything else that is not addressed in this guidance, and we'll be happy to work with you. Other than the guidance, the big news remains is hospital discharges of COVID patients and whether or not skilled nursing facilities must accept COVID-positive patients into their facilities. Last week, we talked about a New York directive where the Department of Health basically directed all skilled nursing facilities to take all patients, including COVID-positive patients, into their facilities. We now see other states addressing this issue. We know that California just recently issued the same directive. We saw from Louisiana, for example, that issued a very different directive, saying that they did not have to accept these patients, and that they urged cooperation between skilled nursing facilities and hospitals. AMDA has worked on this. We had issued a couple of statements, one with the American Healthcare Association. Those were included in those daily updates that I had mentioned, so make sure you're following and reading through those. But essentially, I think what our position is that we urge not to issue those types of directives and instead work with skilled nursing facilities and the hospitals to ensure that there's a plan. There's a plan for skilled nursing facilities, what to do when they're discharging to the hospital. Are they going to bring them back? What's the protocol for that? And vice versa. This really should be a team effort. This should not be a directive. In many states right now, the surge is a couple of weeks away, and this is the time to get together to ensure that medical directors, representatives from skilled nursing facilities, representatives from the state hospital associations and the state societies, along with the local and state governments, are talking about what types of alternative sites are available, whether or not the skilled nursing facilities in that area do have wings or parts of the building that they can quarantine and separate from the rest so that they can accept some of these hospital patients. We've certainly seen examples of that. I don't think that there's any part of skilled nursing facilities that want to be obstructionist or that do not understand the needs of the hospitals and vice versa. Hospitals certainly probably understand the concerns that skilled nursing facilities have. But when the time comes to, in a surge like New York, it's probably not the time to make these decisions. The time to make those decisions is probably now. And we have been working in several states. We've helped in New York, recently in Colorado, Indiana, of course, California, and others, to try and put together this type of coalition to create a plan. I think importantly is coordination with the families of the people, of the residents in these facilities. We saw out of Boston where they emptied out 15 facilities and to use them as COVID facilities, but they did not, according to press reports, did not coordinate this with families, and families are having a hard time figuring out where their loved ones went. So, this is, of course, a difficult situation and a very fast-moving situation, but we urge all of our state chapters and all of the governors and the state hospital associations to create those sorts of coalitions to deal with these issues. We've seen a good example of that in Maryland. We have had a number of state chapter calls where our leaders have shared their experiences and best practices, a lot of those have to do with communicating with one another and creating this sort of plan and not abiding by these very rigid kind of directives that have been issued from state chapters, from state departments of health. So we urge you certainly to do that. If you have any questions, of course, please reach out to us. That's probably two of the biggest issues that are ongoing right now. We are sending out some grassroots. Of course, we are concerned about the availability of protective personal equipment in skilled nursing facilities, about the funding that is going to come from the stimulus package. I should mention that the stimulus package that was passed at $2 trillion has a lot of information in there. There's help for small businesses, so practices, including post-acute and long-term care practices that may be struggling to make payroll or are just struggling to stay afloat. You are eligible to apply for those small business loans, and that was something the American Medical Association had been talking about and others. So please do that. Please be aware that those things are out there and that those things exist. So we are trying to do more. We are trying to do more outreach about the needs of post-acute and long-term care so that it is not a forgotten sector as all of these other conversations are ongoing. That's it for today. Of course, we hope that everybody is staying safe and healthy while they're taking care of their patients, their residents, and hopefully of themselves. There are actually some resources that the American Psychiatric Association has made available, and those we will be sharing. We will be holding webinars and podcasts around mental health and burnout, because, of course, that is an issue as well. So we hope that everybody is staying healthy and safe as much as they can, and we'll try to give these updates as much as we can and continue to advocating on your behalf. And again, just wanted to say thank you for what you're doing, and we'll be talking soon. Thank you.
Delivering true excellence in post-acute medicine requires more investment, resources, and infrastructure than ever before. U.S. Post-Acute Care, a physician-led practice group, has built a business model dedicated to providing high-quality post-acute patient care on a national scale. We make it easy and beneficial for regional practices to leverage our resources to drive the growth and quality of their practices. Visit our website at uspostacutecare.com to see for yourself. Together, we'll be stronger. References from this podcast can be found at paltc.org/policy.